WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
I know the one thing we did right,
hey!
Was the day we started to fight. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on, hold on. Keep your eyes on the prize. Hold on.
Henry Hampton, the creator and producer of the PBS series Eyes on the Prize, died yesterday of lung cancer. He was 58. Eyes on the Prize, which was first broadcast in 1987, was a gripping history of the civil rights movement, which combined insightful contemporary interviews with extraordinary archival film and video. Henry Hampton once said, 100 civil rights stories had been told, but it was always black people being saved by whites. In Eyes, he said, we brought our people up in history. Stuart Cantor of PBS described Hampton as the gracious, determined heart and soul at the center of many landmark programs. Hampton's company, Blackside Productions, was also responsible for the PBS series The Great Depression and America's War on Poverty. In 1990, Hampton told me why it was so important to him to re-examine history through television.
I really do believe history empowers, and it empowers because it allows you to make connections. And one of the things history tells you is that it's oftentimes difficult to figure out. And when things seem the darkest, it's right before something is about to happen. If you look at the world in 1953, in 1954, even after the Brown decision, it doesn't look terribly positive for change. And yet history gives us the kind of vision that says there were an enormous number of forces building up so that when the 54 happens and the signal of the Brown decision happens, that you have a race of people that's ready, you have a nation that's ready to undo its negative heritage. And so in 10 years, the first stage of the civil rights movement happens quickly and efficiently and marvelously. It was a miracle that it occurred and changed our nation.
Are there incidents that really look different to you now, looking at it as history, than they did to you at the time?
Oh, I think Malcolm is the perfect example of something that we all lived through. Probably 95% of the broadcast audience or the United States of America perceived Malcolm as he was portrayed by a few gatekeepers, as being largely an advocate of black supremacy and anti-white rhetoric. And surely Malcolm in his early years did parrot and use that language and felt strongly about white crimes against blacks. But if all you have to do is watch Malcolm a little bit to begin to understand how complex and how smart this man is and how he was changing. He was changing right before our eyes, becoming really a very important international leader. And I think people will see that footage of Malcolm sitting in Egypt talking about human rights, the notion of taking the case of black Americans to the United Nations. Very sophisticated stuff, very different than the single image that was used to portray him. And there is, I think, a great lesson to be learned that when you are offered interpretations of particular characters, that one need take another look and then perhaps another look before you reach judgment. And I think that happens over and over again within the movement, that there are moments which are either by virtue of the emotion or the of the moment, people refuse to take the second look or the second step, and they are caught in time with that reaction to what they've been told.
Is there a sequence in Eyes 2 that is particularly painful or disturbing to you looking back?
There are a couple of moments that stop me. I guess there are two of them that I still find the most difficult. The first is Dr. King in Chicago. If you really have come to understand the power of the Southern movement, that you are you're aware of just what's at stake when we begin to find out it doesn't work up here. And yet it could. It had the capacity to work here. And as you watch it sort of unravel itself, to me, it is very much a lost moment in the society that is impossible to reconstruct. There is the loss of Malcolm. I don't think people understand what a power that he could have been. He could have been as important in reaching African Americans in the urban environment as Dr. King was at reaching people in the South and the church-based movement. Together, if these two men had continued to move closer together, that we could have had a coalition of just enormous power that could have joined with the other members of labor and the churches. And if we had not gotten caught in the disaster of the Vietnam War, we literally could have changed the world and the country in that space in the 60s. And instead of having the kind of painful explosions that did occur.
You've spoke during this interview of the importance of both Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. I was wondering if in the 1960s, when they were both still alive, if you felt that you had to somehow align yourself with one or the other, choose one's tactics over the other, and not, as you do now, see both as being really important for what they did. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes, I do. Most black Americans will now stand up, and when you say Malcolm, they'll either be neutral or they'll be positive about Malcolm. But in reality, most of us, when we first heard about Malcolm X, were scared to death. There was this man who was saying things that had some vague resonance in your soul, but they were also scary. And you also disagreed with some of the notions of race that were put forth early by Malcolm. I remember the first time I ever saw him was in Leverett House at Harvard. I was visiting a friend there, and Malcolm was speaking and just mesmerizing the audience. But he was talking about the failure of integration. And I had been someone raised to believe in integration and to pursue it assiduously, almost uncritically. And I stood up to take exception. And I've always been fond of Malcolm because while he did decimate me, he left me enough self-respect to sit back down quietly. You know, he was so smart and bright about both black history and the role of black Americans in this society. What he did was he provided sort of the other half. The manhood is a bad word because it excludes, but it, basically I can't think of the sense of self and the demand for respect that Malcolm put forth. Martin surely did, but Martin was in many ways ahead of his time. What a brilliant, wonderful notion to save a society through nonviolence. But as you do that, there's a cost to it. And if you are Dr. King, it doesn't matter because you believe so deeply in nonviolence. Your sense of self is anchored in the philosophy. But for most people, if somebody hits you in the nose and you don't react, there's an emotional cost. As healthy as it is not to, I think Malcolm's not being violent, because you really won't find any examples of Malcolm being involved in direct violence except his own death. There's much more death, in fact, around the nonviolent civil rights movement. But there was in Malcolm's demand that you don't touch me, or certainly don't beat or strike my women, that was just a powerful and I think important step for many of us who were struggling with what was a reasonable strategy to correct the ills in the society.
Henry Hampton, he died yesterday of lung cancer at the age of 58. He produced the PBS series Eyes on the Prize, The Great Depression, and America's War on Poverty. Our interview was recorded in 1990.